The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Hesh, Hesher Dude, Hesher McHesherton, El Hesherino, and Hesher the Magnificent.
Who calls him that?
Brian McClain is Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday. Yes, you could call me any of those. Anything works. Just don't call me late for dinner. I hope you're having a great lead in to the weekend and are doing your best to enjoy the news feeds. They are a buzz. They're definitely a buzz. Just had a great hour with Steve Hook there. And I want to thank Steve and my crew here for setting all that up. What an amazing show this is. I mean, Steve and I have different views on a lot of this. I am very, very skeptical. I definitely fall into that category that he and Mr. Cohen were talking about in the first hour. Very skeptical of Western media at this point. And, you know, this idea of terror cells waking up in the United States, you know, that's a tough one. That's a tough one considering the state of our border. We just covered that with Esther Valdez Clayton, who I very much appreciate. You know, she's an immigration attorney. If you missed that, by the way, it'll be in the episodes link up at tntradio.live. And shout out to everybody in the interactive live chat room over there. And if you want to join the folks in that mosh pit, you can do that at the website tntradio.live. But, you know, I'm thinking about this and it's like, okay, well, something has already happened. We've lost 100,000 people to fentanyl. In my estimation, that's poisoning, that's chemical warfare, and it has been and is being allowed to be waged via our southern border largely. You would think, I mean, look at the way we reacted after 9/11. Horrible event. Yeah, absolutely horrible. I don't even want to go back to that in my mind. I always kind of trip for a moment when I invoke it because the memories are burned into my mind's eye. Also the memories of what happened afterward. But yeah, think about the near 3,000 people that we lost on that day in this country. And it's a big deal. Why is 100,000 people dead of poisoning, chemical warfare? Why is that not a big deal? I mean, we took dodgy reports of passports that somehow survived airplanes that did some very strange things, very difficult things to explain. NIST report didn't do a very good job explaining those things in many people's estimation. A lot of smart people. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to go with NIST because it just doesn't, it's not plausible in my worldview to consider something outside of what they've said, the official narrative. But look what happened in the wake of that. We signed a Patriot Act. We have the ongoing National Defense Authorization Act that's approaching like $1 trillion a year. A lot of rights, the ability for the government to suspend people's inalienable rights based on claims and narratives. And you know, hey, if you and these things, you know, I think that the American public would have accepted these things, and we did accept these things because we thought they were going to be wielded against those that would do our country harm. But now we're seeing that this federal government, along with this media, the intelligence services and Fortune 500 and politicians, are not interested in operating within the framework of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. So, oh, and they've also, via the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, made it completely legal for the government and all those things I just mentioned to propagandize to us. That's fine. That's fine and dandy now, apparently. Thank you, Obama administration, for that one. That's turning out to be very handy for a lot of powered interests right now. But it's like, okay, fine. Something gonna bad's going to happen and we're going to be told it's a Hamas cell that, you know, just blame it on the Democrats, blame it on Biden, which is going to further polarize everybody here. And will you and I be able to prove that it was actually Hamas to ourselves? Like really, really 100% where we can say, yes, I know that to be a fact. Or is this just going to be another narrative that if this were to occur, we have to just accept and take on and say, oh, well, those same interests that lied to us about A through Z are now telling us the truth. And it's time to get on the war train, right? I don't know. It just seems to me that if that scenario does happen, we will see further polarization. We will see a lot of people saying that they trust the government narrative on that if and when that does happen. And then we'll see a lot of skeptics. And there's probably these powered interests have gotten very good at pulling these things off in a way where it is virtually impossible to tell for us normal sandwich eaters out here. So it's bad. It's really bad. And it's like the war was already on. The war has been on for a long time. And it was in a fevered pitch of chemical warfare that has left 100,000 Americans and counting. A number probably just died from fentanyl as I've been talking with you. And then look at the streets of Philly. Holy crap. Holy crap. It's like The Walking Dead out. It's like literally like The Walking Dead. It's absolutely bananas. For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, fundraisers happening near you, visit our What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website, tntradio.live, and stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Catch the news on the go.
I listen on the way to work.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, I was happy to report in the previous hour that Pfizer and Moderna stock prices are down considerably this year. With regards to Pfizer, couldn't have happened to a better, criminal organization. And I can say that because it's not a defamation of any sort. It's actually on the legal books. You can look that up. They are the largest criminal payout in corporate American history, I believe. But let's not forget the government gave them all their money for those shots in 2021 and 2022. Oh, wait, they're still giving them money for the shots and the boosters and all this stuff. Anyways, as we approach we're in election season, believe it or not, we are. I don't know if it ever ends, to be quite honest about it, seeing as how power politics is the new reality TV, apparently. But let's look at Virginia in this regard for a moment. Virginia's General Assembly elections are drawing intense national interest and money. So more than 320,000 Virginians have cast ballots in the Commonwealth's November 7 local and state elections, which are being closely watched nationwide in what's being called the first election of the 2024 campaign cycle. And according to data supplied by the Virginia Department of Elections and published by the Virginia Public Access Project, the VPAP, 320,817 had cast early ballots in the election by the close of business just yesterday, including nearly 180,000 in person and more than 140,000 by mail. This 45-day early voting period began September 22nd and runs until November 4th, the Saturday before Virginia's off-year election, one of four states where voters will cast odd-year ballots this fall. Louisianans did so on October 14. But the only one projected to be competitive with control of both state house chambers on the line. In fact, according to 538. It's an interesting site. It's a good one, actually. I recommend you check it out. Virginia has the only high competitive state legislature in the nation right now. And as a result, the election rating service states only Virginia looks to see much drama in its 2023 elections. Now, on Virginia's November 7th ballot are all 100 seats in the Purple Commonwealth's House of Delegates, now led by the GOP at 52 to 48, and all 40 seats in the state Senate where Democrats hold a 22-18 advantage. So this is going to be very interesting to see how this plays out in Virginia. Those are some slim margins right there, a lot of seats up for grabs. So buckle up. This is going to be an interesting one. We're going to keep an eye on what's going on there, because this could be a bit of a bellwether, a bit of a benchmark as we move into the election season. You're listening to the Brian McClain Show at Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Nell.
I've got Judy's book. I've gone through it. It is very, very persuasive. And it's by far one of the best accounts that I can see that has happened. But the problem is, it's so much to take in that you have to kind of split the whole thing apart, because it's a highly complex concept. The idea of directed energy makes no sense to anybody in the main. However, I did notice, Andrew, that with that recent situation that happened in Maui, suddenly I'm seeing the conversation popping up. Have you noticed?
Yes, very much so, Jeremy. Yes, in fact, quite directly, you know, that led to a spike in the sales of Dr. Judy Wood's book. And then, of course, we've now had the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, so they've got another spike for that. So in terms of how do you start these conversations, you know, going back to the previous question, well, the starting of conversations has perhaps got a little bit easier now that we've gone into sort of living in clown world, you know, as so many people have said, and things have been turned upside down with COVID and all of that. And many more people have said, well, what the hell is really going on?
Jeremy Nell on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real, that's substantive, that's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement, it's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real,
it's
dude.
Not bad, huh?
This is Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, joining me now is my weekly correspondent for literature, culture, and media, Mr. Bazed Lit Analyzer from the Bazed Lit Analyzer YouTube channel, also found frequently on the Boiler Room. Bazed, welcome to Today's News Talk. How are you today?
What's up, Asher? Good to talk to you. How you doing? I'm glad to finish out this week strong with you.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm having a great day. I'm really enjoying life and enjoying this nice fall weather out here in Texas. It's cooled off finally. Going to be able to go to the pistol range now and not melt. So very pleased about all that. You know, when I focus on that kind of stuff, it gives me a moment, you know, it gives us all a moment to breathe, go outside, or read a book, or something that is actually enriching to the soul, you know, because, man, there are a lot of black pills floating around in the media this week.
Yes, absolutely. And the weather, of course, is a kind of outer symbol for our inner state, especially, you know, as used in literature. And I think that, you know, right now I look out the window and it's fall. It's a dark autumn. It's raining. The leaves are falling. It's nice and cool. And exactly like you said, this is the time to talk to family and friends and pop on a little Led Zeppelin song, Remains the Same, some medieval fall music, and to enjoy life, like you said, because there is a lot happening right now. Things are going fast forward.
Absolutely. That's right. Bazed and I are hoping that you have a wonderful weekend and get out there and do some of these things, take little breaks from all of the madness that we're seeing. Bazed, what's your take on the current media environment, social media environment? I know you do a lot of what we're talking about right now, reading, creating content, being creative, helping your community, doing your work, you know, so. But you also see the effects because you're around a lot of people. You've seen the polarization that's happening right now. I mean, how are you analyzing everything that you're seeing, like this crazy polarization that we're looking at right now?
Well, that's a good question. I think that for my own part, what's really stunned me over the past couple of weeks is the way that people have sort of gone right back into the old mode. And I'm talking like around 9/11, you know, 20 years ago, total war mode, including their use of specific language. The diction has gotten incredibly hostile. And that worries me in a sense, because it shows me that, especially from people in the circles that we sort of navigate through, I think that it's amazing how easily people can be manipulated by specific diction in the media, the way that war just overtakes us. I think that when we look back 3 years ago, this was we had the war on ourselves, right? We had we went from the Cold War to the war on terror to the war, you know, the virus war, and now we're in a hot war again, it seems. But I think that again, for my own part, I like to step away from this. People can do what they want, but the media blitz is so intense right now, and it can be really overwhelming. And I think it's important, like you said at the beginning, to step away and to kind of look at things in parallel where you have meaning, to read books and to watch films, to experience art, because oftentimes we get a deeper truth from looking at the written word, for instance, than we do at the supposed facts in especially mainstream media, where nothing is as it seems and everything contradicts itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that in mind, I mean, give us maybe how about a Bayes-Litt analyzer reading suggestion list for the weekend, perhaps? I mean, stuff that, like, maybe someone's having a hard time unplugging from all this and looking for some context. Like, they don't necessarily want to go into fiction, but maybe some nonfiction that could provide some food for thought when looking at the current events.
Well, yeah, that's excellent that you bring that up. One of my friends just brought that up about an hour ago, the same exact topic. He was looking for that from me. And I think that, of course, the one place that I would always go and that I would recommend anybody goes to go to would be to look in scripture, just for, you know, for me, to look, especially to read the Psalms. I think there's a lot in reading the book of Psalms that can provide some context and some, you know, it's a hospital for the soul, you know, to look for the way that David in the Psalms goes through hellish agony in a number of instances and then finds salvation. I think that in terms of last night on Boiler Room, we were actually talking about some of the awful videos and propaganda that's been coming out, especially on X. And I immediately thought of the Iliad. There's a scene in the Iliad, of course, where Achilles desecrates the body of Hector when they're in the Trojan War. And I think that sounds like something that would not be, it wouldn't lighten your load. Okay. However, when you read the ancient texts and the texts in the canon, they give you an overall view, a holistic view, where you can see that there's purpose in life and there's a structure and there's order. And oftentimes we don't get that when we're just barraged with the 24/7, you know, news cycle, the infinite scroll. I think that for something truly lighter, you could read fiction. I would recommend works in the canon, the great works of literature. Read poetry. I mean, honestly, I read a lot of poems. I read a lot of history. And I think that by looking at the truth of the written word, again, we find a lot of times people are at a loss for meaning. They can't make sense of the world and why things happen. And oftentimes the great works of literature will provide that paradigm when you're least expecting it. So one, you know, we've been talking a lot about Don DeLeo and Cormac McCarthy over the past year on my channel. Of course, those are kind of darker postmodern works, but I would look at, read some Dylan Thomas. That's what I'll say. Read some Dylan Thomas, find yourself in love with nature and the romantic ideals of being alive, enjoy life.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, that's some great suggestions right there. And, you know, as my eyes get a little bit older, tell me this, I think I'm noticing that I was always very nearsighted and I had LASIK. So I have great, you know, distance vision now, but I've had to up the size of the text on my phone. I think it's probably, you know, a matter of aging and all that, but also just all the blue light damage. I mean, I've got, you know, 9 blue lights pointing at me right now, pretty much, maybe 10. but if you read, it helps your eyes too, right? I was told by Clive DeCarl, specifically, if you read through pinhole glasses, you can actually reverse some of that damage.
Yeah, there's also another exercise that, you know, you can pick this up on social media, you know, the moving your eye side to side, left to right, it helps the amygdala and stimulates the brain. But I think that reading is something, it's almost mystical. You know, you're looking at symbols on a page. You've got a piece of a tree in front of you and you've got black marks on a page, and yet they give you life and they give you meaning. It's really, it's unbelievable to go to that extent to interpret language. And that we think in words, we dream in words. And I think that I've had the same problem as you. All the blue light, all of the, you know, the phones are doing damage, and sometimes it's hard for your vision to focus. But remember when you were young and they would say, don't read in the dark, right? It's going to make you blind.
Yeah.
And I read in the dark. I read in the dark for years. And
tell us not to do something and we're surely going to do it, right?
Exactly. When they said, don't watch television because it'll make your eyes square, there have been times where I thought my eyes were literally square after watching MTV for 7 hours when I was 14. But I think that, for instance, I think one good thing about reading is that it provides a counterpoint to, for instance, video games. You know, I don't have a problem with gaming, with video games. I think that, especially how far they've advanced in the storylines, and but I think that it can do something to your brain where you are constantly receiving. You're just receiving information. But when you're reading, it's an active process. It's an active pursuit. And people, you know, people have a difficult time, I think, if they're not readers. They say, how do I get into this? I don't like reading. It's, you know, it's whatever. But the one thing I'll say is that find something. Don't take recommendations from people. Find something that you are interested in and go and pursue it. Just like you go down a rabbit hole when you're looking for things on the internet, do the same thing with a book. I had a friend when we were little and he never read, and he went and bought the Bo Jackson autobiography, and it talked all about Bo Jackson in LA and gang life. And it was, that made him a reader. Ever since then, he's read books because it was something that it was important to him and it was cool. So find something cool that you're interested in and spend some time, you know, daydreaming and imagining, like when you were a kid.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point, because a lot of people, I think most of us have been through this at some point, are really into something in pop culture. And I think that's because we have such high technology now that the things that are packaged for us are very engaging, be they games or, you know, comic books or Marvel movies or, you know, whatever your thing might be, you know, baseball, whatever, music, for example. If you're like me and you're really into music and you're like, what can I read? You know, I don't like reading. There's so many biographies, autobiographies, books by produced. Yeah, there's a great one right there. What are you holding up?
So what I'm holding up right here is my 7th grade English teacher. His name was Gene Bruner. Shouts out to Gene Bruner, Mr. Bruner. My first day of class, he said, what kind of music you like? And I was like, I like The Doors. They're my favorite. And he said, have you read No One Here Gets Out Alive? I was like, no, I've never heard of it. And he gave me these two books, No One Here Gets Out Alive, the Doors biography, and Led Zeppelin, Hammer of the Gods. I was in 7th grade. And he said, read those books and they'll change your life. And they were the first two books that I'd read that were really like what I wanted to read, like as a grown up. You know, it was getting me into being a grown up, and that made me a reader for the rest of my life. But he did that. And I think that, like you were saying with music, you know, oftentimes music is a good inroad into literature or other art. And it's crazy to think about art from the standpoint of, you know, that there are people who make a living pretending, for instance, right, on the theater. That's what Richard Burton said. You know, I make a living playing dress up. But those things are necessary. We need those things as human beings. We need to, like they say, tell stories. We need to see ourselves in other situations. We need to see what the potential of a human being is. And we need to, you know, search for why are we here, and really what's our relationship with God? What are we doing here and what does it mean? So I think it's, you know, explore. Oftentimes, you know, grownups will lose that imagination that they had when they were a child, right? When we played pretend. But that's still a thing when we're older. You know, you just have to think about things and use your mind and kind of turn off out of the normal, you know, wagey life that we have, especially in America, and daydream a little bit. Think about the possibilities of life. I know I sound like kind of ethereal and esoteric here, kind of new agey, but I mean these things. They're important for us on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in this day and age. I mean, we are quite literally bombarded with a media cycle that provides a strategy of tension. It's actually a warfare tactic. It's a propaganda tactic. It's a marketing tactic. It can be used for all different kinds of things. And this is an escape, perhaps a, well, quite obviously a more healthy escape than some others, not to bash anyone's Call of Duty time, because we all love to get in Call of Duty and get some headshots in. We have a headline coming up right here with today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're getting back to the news.
TNT Radio News.
What the f***?
This is James O'Neill with the check of the day's headlines. Israel seemed to be preparing for its anticipated ground invasion of the Gaza Strip early Friday, with a significant border town evacuated and fleets of tanks positioned along the border, where hundreds of thousands of soldiers are already stationed. A recent poll has indicated that a significant portion of the UK population views small boat migrants as a security concern. Once asked whether they regarded those entering the country illegally as a national security threat, 52% answered yes.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
You know, I'm here with Bazed Lit Analyzer. And Bazed, you were saying, you know, sometimes you hear people say, oh, I don't like reading. I can't get into it. I'm not about it. I just don't think I'm cut out for it. But in my experience, it seems to me it's a little, you could compare it to like picking up math after not doing math for a long time, or going to the gym after being sedentary for a long time. Yeah, you're going to feel like this is not for me. Anything that you do to break out of a, you know, habitual state of normalcy. And unfortunately, you know, we were talking before the headline there, the habitual state of normalcy right now is one of heightened awareness, fight or flight, constant dialectics, you know, constant dopamine hits and oxytocin hits and lows and valleys, you know, peaks and valleys. But this is like, you know, if you keep going to the gym, eventually, you know, you start to be like, hey, I like this. I feel the benefits of it. I'm waking up parts of my body that were not being used before. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that metaphor?
I think it's great. It's really, it's an apt metaphor. I think that, you know, everyone has fallen out of shape, and it is very, very hard to get back into the routine, especially as a grown-up. It's very, I remember my dad telling me when I was a teenager, you know, you got to keep exercising. Don't put on any weight. It's impossible to get off when you're older. Cause when you're young, you know, it kind of comes off. And it's the same with intellectual pursuits. You know, I read all the time, constantly. I love reading. I always have, but there are times when, you know, I take a break. You know, and I just find myself watching movies for like 4 days. And even after just a few days, you have to get back into the routine. But like Jack Kerouac said in his Rules for Prosody, he said, believe in the holy contour of life, right? Which is the ups and downs, that sort of wave, that sort of wavelength, which is inherent in Renaissance poetry. That's in the very lines of verse. And I think that you have to kind of go out into the ocean of life and go for a swim and let a wave, you know, take you where it will. And part of intellectual pursuits, you know, part of doing things that are kind of difficult at first is that you just have to let yourself go in a way. You know, any married man who's, you know, their wife is, let's say, dragged them to the symphony or the opera and they just don't want to go. But often, you know, they will go. They'll be dragged along, and then once they're there, there will be something that they take away that they find beautiful. And beauty is necessary in life, right? Truth, beauty, and goodness. You have to see beauty even in the midst of all of the stuff that's going on right now, especially right now, right? Constant warfare, like you were saying, strategy of tension, problem, reaction, solution. It never stops. So what can we do? Well, we can be dialed in, of course, but there are other things, you know, and that doesn't mean you're going away from those things. It just means that life is full, right, with its fiery beauty and its bounty. There's a lot in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that holy contour of life that you're talking about right there. When I would estimate that when we live in the infinite scroll and the instant gratification and the amplification of pushing the outrage button on our hearts, you know, when we see things, it eventually breaks people down depending on their situation. Cause it's, you know, like we've discussed with Corey Drayton here and on Boiler Room also, you know, that there's a trauma involved in that. There's a physical trauma that can be shown, right? It lives here in your neck, and you get that same trauma just from being a normal human in the 21st century right now, largely because of the technocratic elements, the feedback loops. And
yeah, absolutely.
And it makes it such that if you have that dip in life, or, you know, you're somehow taken out of that constant thing, you can crash. You know, we have rashes of suicide, outbreaks of suicide in the country that are not talked about. And I think it's because people are not doing, you know, these sort of, they're not well balanced. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here, is being well balanced and taking care of yourself so that when things do get hard, you know, you don't feel like there's no way out, or it's pharmacological or suicidal or something like that.
Yeah, we have an entire society right now that is subject to, I mean, these things are purposeful also, right? It's like, you know, when they say that the algorithm determines that, you know, you clicked on the one thing and it was a war footage, and it's going to keep barraging you with those things. And people are, I think in general, many people lack the discernment that allows them to kind of step back and have some sort of, you know, they can take an overview of a situation, or they can be dispassionate about it, the events that they see. But yeah, we're all subject to this stuff all the time, every day. The horrible imagery, the information war, ideology. Now, part of that is life, you know, and you know, disagreeing with people, and you know, you come across things that you find repugnant. But we have to find a way around those things and still be able to go home and, you know, hug your kids, or, you know, eat dinner with your wife without, you know, without sitting down and talking about, did you see the rocket attacks, you know? And it's like, you can talk about those things, but they're designed, at least the coverage of those things is designed to, I really think this, to break us down into, you know, it's a kind of interior aesthetic terrorism that we're a lot, you know, where people are generally unaware that they're being subjected to that, but it's a fact. We are all the time. So mm-hmm. I don't think it's bad to, you know, social media isn't bad by, you know, in itself, but like you said, you know, you have to go outside, you know, go into the cathedral of nature, go out and talk to real people, and remember that there was life before all that, before you were seeing all this stuff all the time. You know, life was still here, and it'll keep going on.
Yeah, it wasn't all that long ago where that kind of thing, you know, we would all be able to still communicate with each other because we weren't taking the identity politics into the fabric of our worldview and then feeling the need to rigorously defend those based on those planks, or conversely, go after people that aren't holding the same viewpoint. So it's really changed our society big time.
It has. And you know, you bring up a good point. I don't know if you sort of feel this, but one of the things that's come out of, especially of this latest conflict, is that it seems that people are drawn into their corners or their categories in a way where they find themselves defending things that they honestly don't really agree with, probably. they're unaware of the totality of what they're defending. And what I mean is that if you find yourself on, you know, some of the lines that you're supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to be on one side or the other of these continuous things, there's obviously nothing wrong with being either in the middle or being over it or saying, they both have points, or just not engaging at all. I mean, as long as I think that people have one has to have a backbone about the things that you deeply believe in, which is the difference here. I think that, for instance, this conflict has a lot of people drawn into these corners, and this isn't even what they want to fight for. It's just they're put there. So I guess it's like, I don't know, pick your battles, maybe.
Exactly.
Like a genius resolution at the end there, but
well, that's the problem, you know. We don't have a great resolution to this right now because we're so far down this path that, you know, we're quite literally have to go on air and say, hey, maybe we're stop and read a book, folks. Right. It's that
chill.
Simple.
Yeah, chill. Listen to chill. Listen to some Peter Tosh and chill.
That's right. Put Bush Doctor on. Everything will That's be right. good. All right, Based. Get us out of here. We got to let you go. I got a guest looking to come on, and I'm very excited to speak with him as well. I hope you have a great weekend, Based, and tell everybody what you got coming up and where to find you.
Thank you so much, Asher. Yeah, I'm Bayes Lit Analyzer over at YouTube, and I've got analysis coming up of Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried. I'll be doing James Joyce and Dubliners. Next week, I'll be on with Jay Dyer and Jamie Hanshaw doing spooky season film analysis. So shouts out to everybody at TNT and everybody listening. Hope you all have a great
Yes. week. All right. Thank you for joining me right here on the Brian McClain Show at Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
How many of you out there are Monty Python fans? Now, I try to be a nice guy all the time, but I like to have a little bit of humor in what I do. And there is a skit by Monty Python called the Upper Class Twit of the Year. Now, if you've never seen it before, I would Google it. Because every time I see King Charles speak on climate, it reminds me of the skit. The guy is saying that climate change is a bigger threat than, for instance, nuclear war. Now, let me get this straight. Just looking around the planet right now, we find more people on Earth alive today than ever before. Of course, that means more people have to die than ever before, because after all, no one's going to live forever. But when you look at that, you say to yourself, well, how can that possibly be that so many people are living if the climate is getting so bad? And how is the climate supposed to be so bad that all these people are going to die and the threat is greater than a nuclear war? Now, that may bring a frown to your face. My advice is go Google Upper Class Twit of the Year, and I guarantee you'll be laughing at it. By the way, I was rooting for Nigel. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In fiscal year 2019, 2,800 pounds of fentanyl was seized at the US-Mexico border. The following year, 4,800 pounds was seized, and in fiscal year 2021, seizures totaled 11,200 pounds. The figures indicate fentanyl seizures under Biden quadrupled since fiscal year 2019, when Trump was in office. Fentanyl is primarily flown from China to Mexico before the Mexican cartels traffic it across the southern border. Only a fraction of fentanyl trafficked across the border is seized by Department of Homeland Security. The Center for Disease Control, CDC, reported that more than 100,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in the past 12 months, and two-thirds of those deaths were linked to fentanyl.
A cross between ZZ Top and Sherlock Holmes. You're with Hesher on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, final segment of the Brian McClain Show right here on Today's News Talk. TNTradio.live is our website. Wow, you know, that was a well-timed station headline up there at the top, because that goes right into what I wanted to talk about, at least one of the things I want to talk about with my next guest. 100,000 dead Americans, many of them young, many of them not even drug users, over this chemical warfare. I don't know what else to call it other than chemical warfare. It doesn't feel like drugs to me. It feels like chemical warfare, although that is a very gray area. If you look at the trank dope zombies that are walking around completely bent over and falling down in the streets with body parts rotting off. I can't even believe I'm saying this right now in Pennsylvania. Joining me now to discuss some of this and as it pertains to the security at our border, we want to hear what you've been hearing and seeing. We've got retired U.S. Border Patrol Eric Swanson rejoining me here. Eric, welcome to the program. What do you think about my assessment of chemical warfare? Am I going too far? Am I being dramatic? And if I'm not, why is the federal government not speaking like I am?
Hello, sir. Thanks for having me on. I don't think that's a pretty big statement, but I think it's a true statement. Why is the increase in fentanyl and all these other drugs there? Well, when agents are dealt with hundreds and thousands of bodies, they're making good seizures. But what they were got there, it's getting through because they're dealing with so many people, they can't get it all. So that's why you're seeing more deaths, because more is getting through because nothing's being done about it.
It's a pretty horrifying number, you know, and it was, you know, I think back to the, you know, opioid crises that we've had and other, you know, factors in the drug war, some of the more, you know, really damaging to culture and society and our legal system and families, you know, things like methamphetamine and all that. This just seems like so far and away different from that. And I know it's, you know, a drug that, you know, pharmacists and doctors use to some extent in hospitals and stuff, but the amount of illicit material of this stuff coming from multiple countries that are not exactly friendly to this country and being ushered in by the Mexican cartel and, you know, those that are exploiting it, I just find it so strange that right now, I mean, obviously Hamas is a big topic right now, but I look at the way Hamas operates and its involvement in government, and I can't help but think that we're looking at a similar sort of government in Mexico with the cartels. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, I saw a mayor get dragged through the streets recently behind a truck in Mexico for not following cartel protocol or whatever, and I can't help but think, wow, we've got something very similar happening in our backyard.
Absolutely. You mentioned a mayor getting drugged down the street. What of the other government officials aren't getting drugged down the street, but are sitting in their offices right now, like our government officials are, but are in cahoots with the Mexican cartel? It's either help me out, or you're going to end up in a 55-gallon barrel with acid and concrete. That's how it's going to be, or decapitated, or what else?
Yeah, yeah, this is a huge problem. So, what are you seeing? I mean, I want to hear from you. What as a retired U.S. Border Patrol? I mean, you've got a great background in this. You're a subject matter expert. I've been looking at the Eagle Pass sector. I've been looking at the Tucson sector and the San Diego area. They're all just maddening. I mean, 48,000 people through Eagle Pass sector in 28 days.
Correct. But now I'm looking at some of the numbers, and it's, you see far less in detention. And what does that tell you? Well, if there's far less in detention, there's that many more. They're just funneling through there. They don't have the time to check for criminal records, backgrounds, if they're wanted, if they're sleepers. They don't have time. And that's what I'm seeing now, is that they're still coming across, but there's far less being detained. So if there's still the same amount coming across, where are they going? They're chumming them out and throwing them on the streets of LA to Washington to Maine to Florida.
And with that in mind, I'm particularly interested in your assessment of the behavior and policies of my governor, Greg Abbott. He's had this Operation Lone Star going out here for a couple of years now. It's a tens or hundreds of millions of dollar project. I see a lot of public relations sort of stuff, content coming out of it, and you know, putting people on buses and some high profile things. But then there's all the not high profile stuff. I mean, he's sending people to San Diego now. I'm not really sure how to feel about this. What's your assessment?
Well, I don't know if it's done for a... I mean, I have nothing wrong with the governor. I like what he's doing because he's standing up for once. If that's to get buses to San Diego, Diego to Maine to wherever else they're going, to New York, to DC. Hey, you're not doing anything about it, so we're going to drive them where we want to drive them. And until you stop it, then you're not gonna, then you're going to continue to see them. San Diego would be a good place because they're obviously doing the same thing, is letting them as fast as they can put their hands on them, as fast as they're basically now, it's quick, naked out, and you're up the road. And, you know, they issued the notice to disappear is what they're called. You know, that's what they're getting. What it's a notice to disappear, not to appear, because they'll never show up.
Oh, great. That's another one I'm never going to be able to forget. I keep adding phrases to the lexicon dealing with this subject here. And what are your, I hear different numbers from different people on the low end, maybe the verifiable sort of public end. I'm hearing like 2.2 million people since Biden took office. But then I'm hearing on the high end between 8.4 and 10 million because of all gotaways and, you know, so many other variables. What's your estimation?
2 million, I would say it's more than that.
Okay,
I bet you it's in upwards of 10 million.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of seems to be the upper estimate that I'm hearing from a lot of people. Let me ask you this one. I spoke with a gentleman that works out in, I think he's in the Del Rio sector, and he is he's contracted by private landowners to patrol their land as they're on, you know, their border properties. And he, along with a journalist, were out there recently, and they were getting footage of Border Patrol cutting the Constantina wire and getting people across the other side. And they had the cops called on them, and the cops came and said, hey, you can't take this footage. What do you think about that? I mean, people have, first of all, having to hire private security for their property because it's gotten so bad. And then the police intervening when they're trying to collect data.
So you said Border Patrol cutting the fence. You're saying that's what you said, Border Patrol?
I believe it was the Border Patrol, yeah. But I think Texas DPS was out there too.
Cutting the concertina wire around landowners or around actually the fence? Because
on landowner property, I believe.
And that's to get illegal aliens out?
To get them across because they had crossed the river.
Hmm. And I didn't hear that, but that's a tough one. But you got to think of, you know, it's a human life. You got to think of the safety factor thing. But I didn't hear about any Border Patrol agents cutting any fences, whether it's on private land. There's reasons when you could, but I didn't hear that. I would hear that.
All right. Well, I'll send you that interview after we speak. Sorry to throw a hot potato at you.
No, I didn't hear about that because that doesn't sound like what Border Patrol agents would do, cutting anybody's fences. If it's a safety thing,
yeah,
or something like that, absolutely. But to save a human life, but not to let them through. If you're letting them through to further their future into the U.S., I don't think that would happen. I couldn't see that.
Okay. Well. In the larger perspective, I'm seeing, and I've talked with Art Del Cueto about this a couple of times, I'm seeing a lot of Americans very upset that Border Patrol is simply processing, even to the point where they are cutting Constantina wire in certain areas. On the one hand, I get it. You've got someone throwing a blanket over this really dangerous thing, and they're going to go over or under it anyways. So it's like, you know, we don't want to see this person get cut in half or something like that. So there's that humanitarian aspect that's very obvious, but there's also the fact that there's like you guys deal with rules of engagement, right? It's not like you can go on strike or say, I'm not going to do that. It's un-American, right? I mean, other than, you know, resigning, that's not really an option for a Border Patrol, correct?
Absolutely. But if you're talking people are upset, citizens, I mean, you just see it more and more. They're getting upset that nothing's being done about this crisis, this absolute chaos along the border. I'd go say as high as a national emergency, but there's nothing being done about it.
I would too, considering we lost 100,000 people, you know, and then there's all these, you know, these high numbers of young people, minors, that the government has no idea where they are. You know, this idea of letting minors through who, in some cases we're hearing, have been drugged and are like, oh, they're sleeping, we got to process quick, you know, oh, that kid's sleeping. But it's like, is it really sleeping? You know, is that kid really sleeping? Are these, who's the sponsor for these kids? You know, they've got 80,000, I think, back in April, they said they didn't know where they were. So this is all very disturbing that the government is allowing this to happen. What do you think about this idea of sleeper cells? The mainstream media is talking a lot. FBI is putting notifications out. They're saying, hey, we got to be on the watch for sleeper cells. And it's, in my estimation, it was just kind of like, well, duh, there's 10 million people here. We have no idea who they were.
Well, yes. Back to your thing about the people. Wait till it gets summertime in Texas, California, Arizona, New Mexico. And they've got hundreds of thousands of people. They're going to lose them by, you know, they're going to fall. But sleeper cells, absolutely. It's the same thing with the fentanyl. It's increased, in my opinion, because they're getting some loads and they're making it look good. Hey, this news is out there, which is a good bust. But for everyone, they're getting out, 4, 5, 6, or 8 getting away. I haven't heard in San Diego sector, for example, any tunnels being discovered as of late. Well, when you don't have anybody working and they're being tasked with this and tasked with that, because I'm sure that the Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, is dealing with a lot of stuff too. How many people getting through the tunnels? San Diego is one of the largest areas that they find underground tunnels. The last one I worked was 85 feet below the surface. That being said, and how many people are using it to advantage as a terrorist? Hey, this group gets caught by the Border Patrol. They want to be caught. These ones, they don't want to be caught. So they don't have agents in the hills. They're going to go through the hills. There's no doubt in my mind that bad people have entered this country since this chaos. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind.
Well, I remember some years back during the Trump administration, there was a lot of talk of Border Patrol closing things like that down, shutting down areas where drones were flying and shutting down tunnels. Am I remembering that correctly? It seems like there's probably no time for that sort of work to be done anymore. It makes me wonder what kind of construction's been rebuilding.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% correct. So the reason I can think of it as a sink right now, and you have a bathroom sink, and you have a 5-gallon bucket, it will go down. The water will go down if you pour it slowly. But if you dump it, it's just going to go up the sides and splash out. You're going to get about 20% of it, if that, and 80% is getting away. That's what's happening on the border now. It's a sink that can't control the flow of water, and it's coming at as fast as you can turn the spigots on, and no one's being done about it.
And if somehow I was able to just mystically put you in charge of all things, just, you know, say, sorry, Mayorkas, you're out. Eric's on. What do we do in the quick to turn this around? Can it even be turned around? We don't have enough people to unprocess 10 million people. We don't have enough judges and courts and lawyers to make this happen. No, I mean, it's untenable. Several.
Well, you know how much many millions of dollars we give to, let's just say, Mexico? How many millions and billions of dollars we get in foreign aid a year to them? And we're still going on? President of Mexico, President of the U.S., they meet in Australia, let's say. It doesn't matter, in a neutral place. It says January 18th, when you're supposed to get your foreign aid, President, you're not getting it anymore. Until you keep every single person, it doesn't matter if they're from Brazil or any other country, from crossing your border into the United States, you're not getting a dime. It's going to stop up real quick. If we send them back and turn them away, tell them, hey, you jumped over that fence, get back over it, you know, and you send them away. You've got to, here's how it is. When you teach recruiting, you teach little kids, you want to know what the Border Patrol does. Say, little Johnny, when someone comes to your house, how do they get in? And they say, they knock on the door or they ring the doorbell. That's right. What if they just jump in the backyard and come in? That they're not supposed to do that. That's against that's basically what it is. Everybody can come to one of the best countries in the world. There's a right way and the wrong way. And if the wrong way says this, and enforce the laws that you're making, the Senate, Congress, and all that you're in making, let us enforce it. But they don't let you enforce it. That's bottom line is how it is.
You know, that's very well said. I really appreciate that, because it involves almost no change in our legal system here. It involves almost no spending of money. It's like there are diplomatic ways in which this could be done, financial ways in which this could be done, and all of the laws that we could possibly need to process illegal people coming over the border are already in place. It would just be a change of policy, and arguably the policies that are going on right now, well, disastrous. Eric, yes, absolutely. Eric, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for everything you're doing and for bringing your subject matter expertise to us here on today's News Talk. And I'll look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
How many times, sir? Take care.
All right, we will. That's Eric Swanson, everybody, right here on the Brian McLean Show. Stay tuned for Misty Winston. She's coming up next, right here on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.